You're listening to Popstar Conversations, taking you inside with your favourite musical artists.
Chuck and I will be speaking to one of music's biggest legends, Phil Collins. Phil, welcome to the show.
Phil, thanks for coming on the show.
With so many artists reissuing their back catalog and their old albums, why haven't you remastered yours yet?
Well, I think it comes from the artist. You know, I mean, I feel like a record company would kill me, but I feel like the remastering, the repackaging, all that stuff is a money-making exercise that I don't really want to be part of unless there's a little bit of art involved. So I resisted this for a while. And the line was, well, I mean, the things that brought me round were the obvious, in a way. My stuff is being rediscovered by a lot of people. In the last couple of years, there's been a kind of quite high-profile people saying, listing me as one of their influences. You know, whether it's, from the thing like with Adele wanting to work with me, or whether it's Pharrell, or whether it's Beyonce, or whether it's any number of people that are interviewed by Rolling Stone. You know, they're just, and someone will say, hell, I hear so-and-so's been talking about you again.
But the Beatles remasters, they were really great. Did you follow a similar approach?
No, I mean, these were remastered, not remixed. To be quite honest with you, I've left the remastering to Nick Davis and Miles at Abbey Road. You know, I don't even have something to listen to music on. I listen to it on my computer. You may have heard me talk about it as you came in, but I've heard from two different people today how great the remasters sound. And so I'm very, very happy that I was confident in Nick. He went there and, you know, and you're talking about some things like on face value is a cassette of me and Eric Clapton, you know, that I found, which is a demo basically of the way I originally heard the song and I wanted him to do it. We recorded it and, I was a stupid idiot, but the way it is on this record, the version with me and Eric, is the way I wanted it on the original record. But I got sidetracked and went for perfection. So I got another guitar player, Joe Partridge, to come in and play it. And just got too precious with the whole thing. It should have been the way it is with Eric. Unfortunately, I've still got the cassette. But, you know, so we're talking about, you know, remastering kind of putting a cassette through all that process. So some of the early stuff, I'm not quite sure. It sounds okay if you play it on a computer. I don't know if anybody with a good system may not have the same result.
The piano version of Against All Odds, there seems to be a lot of background noise.
Oh, that was the original demo, yeah. That's the demo. Well, that's the thing, you know. I mean, I didn't think about turning anything off. I mean, I've always said that face value is my demos, as most of my records have been. But of course, as years have gone by, technology's got a bit better, and you can get rid of some stuff. But there's phones ringing and all that kind of stuff. You know, because I just had open mics, you know, and I hadn't written the words yet to Against All Odds. So, and at that point, it was called How Can You Sit There? How can you sit there and say to me, you know? And then I changed it all for Against All Odds, the movie, which is when the song was used. But it was written at the same time as the Face Value songs. So yes, it is. It's the hiss of a storage heater going on and off, the phone ringing, the fridge.
Your unreleased songs for Both Sides ended up on the internet without you knowing about it?
You know, it's always interesting when you're collecting things. For example, for one reason or another, I started on a tangent looking for a version of, I thought, well, if everything else is on the internet, I wonder if this song that I did with For All Things Must Pass, I wonder if there's alternate takes for some of the things on the George Harrison album that I was present at but never on. And there isn't, is the short answer. There's lots of other versions of the songs that he did for that album, but not The Art of Dying. But when I was looking for my stuff, I came across a thing called Watch the Clock, which is an unfinished demo with barely lyrics at all, and somehow it's on the internet. And I just don't know how this stuff happens. I don't even have a copy of it.
Why didn't you reissue your material in chronological order?
I think probably, well, Face Value was obvious choice. I think Both Sides was, as always, I've always talked about it as one of my favorite records. And I think the record company were thinking, well, if we do Both Sides, he'll go out and talk about it because it's his favorite record. If it's left till later, who's going to talk about this lot? You know, so I was quite happy to have Both Sides as I mean, they're not done in any order. I think that kind of makes it a little bit more interesting, because if you're a fan of the later stuff than the earlier stuff, then you sort of say, well, I want to wait 2 or 3 years until the good stuff comes out. You know, I mean, it's all mixed up.
How does it feel to listen to these songs and reflect on the different phases of your life?
Yeah, but I mean, I've heard these things on and off since they were written. You know, for me, it's not... There isn't that moment where you think, oh my God, you know, this is great, or this is my life going in front of me. The big surprise was the live stuff, really. Survivors, Can't Turn Back the Years. Those songs were great live. And I like Can't Turn Back the Years a lot on the album, on Both Sides, and it's one of my favorite songs that I've written. But the guys in the band put a beautiful introduction together, and it kind of set the song up. So for me, that's the stuff that I, you know, when you play it live, you think, oh, the album's barely out, and you want to go back and re-record it with the new bits, you know. So for me, it's interesting to hear some of the, again, a reminder of how good those bands were that I played with, you know.
Do you think that suffering makes for good art?
Yep. Some tears have been spilled. Yeah.
Phil, you were using R&B horns and drum programming at the time. That wasn't very conventional.
Oh, I had some wonderful little moments with Face Value. And this was Armit Ertegun, bless his heart, and Nesri Ertegun, you know, the heads of Atlantic Records and Warner Brothers Records in Europe. Nesri was in charge of Warner's, WEA, and Armit was in charge of Atlantic. And those guys were music guys. You know, they didn't hear anything wrong with putting horns on English music, or that mix of R&B and English, the Englishness that I was. But radio back then, and you know, yeah, you can't, we can't play this because it's got horns on. We can't play, this is R&B, and we're not an R&B station. That was what I kept being told. It's got horns on, it's too black, we can't play that. It's amazing to think about this, but in the early 80s, this was still the way it was talked about. Daryl Sturm has made this great point that an album like Face Value, which has got so much diversity on it, you know, it's got the horns, it's got the solo piano song, with, you know what I mean, it's got the gentle soul of If Leaving Me Is Easy, it's got In the Air Tonight. You know, you don't get albums like that anymore. I mean, maybe you do the odd one here and there, but because of radio and the way things have been compartmentalized, styles, there's an overall style to a record, whereas my record didn't have any style. I don't mean that in the sartorial sense, you know, but it didn't have one particular kind of sound. It was an album that was made up of different kinds of songs because I listened to different kinds of music. And I think that's one of the things that maybe stands out a little bit about it. Maybe that's one of the reasons why people liked it. I don't know.
On your album, Both Sides, you were basically a one-man band and an engineer.
Well, the reason for that was because, you know, I guess you always want to stretch yourself a bit. What had happened to me leading up to that album was, you know, personal changes in my life. And these songs, again, like Face Value, were very personal. And it is one of my favorite albums because I was there, and the way it was written and the way it just came out, the way this stuff just came out. And I was there with a play and record button to record it, you know, but it was in my little studio in England. And some songs were improvised there and then, you know, and I recorded it on 12-track. And then I took it into the Genesis studio to copy it to 24-track and add drums. And really, that was the only thing we changed. We just added real drums on some tracks. I didn't sing anything again. You know, it was all demos. It was home demos. So that's one of the reasons why I think I like it the most.
In your opinion, which tracks off the solo album represent your best drumming?
Well, I mean, okay, so In the Air Tonight, would be one, obviously. Take Me Home would be another. I think the mix of drums and drum machine on Take Me Home. I mean, I think on In the Air Tonight too, you know, I think, because as a songwriter, I tend to use drums as a colour. I don't necessarily use it to show that I'm a good drummer. You know, I use it to see what it can add to the song at any particular moment. So that's why, as a drummer, I'm quite happy to, for something like Can't Turn Back the Years, which has not got real drums on it at all, just got a drum machine, I'm quite happy to have that as one of my favourite drum tracks. You know what I mean? It's weird. A track like I've Forgotten Everything, which is one of my favourite songs that I've ever written. I have no idea how I wrote it. I can't play it today. I played it once and I recorded it, and then I wrote the words and sang them. You know, it's completely fresh, freshly baked, you know? And a drum part like that, which is just a kind of a Blue Nile type thing, just a very easy, simple backbeat and a bass drum. You can't get drummers to do that. They get bored. They play more than you want. I know, you know, I'm a drummer. I know that's what we do. We get bored and we fill the space up. So that's why I use drum machine, because sometimes you want that repetitive thing that doesn't change.
Phil, as a drummer, who influenced you?
Well, I'd have to say Ringo is in there, you know, because he just played some great things with some great songs, you know. And he's not as simple a drummer and as kind of, you know, he was given a hard time in the 60s by people that thought he wasn't flash enough. He's a great drummer.
Have you ever met Keith Moon?
Yeah, I met him a couple of times, but he wouldn't have remembered. But, yeah, he's one of my favourite drummers. Ginger Baker, of course, you know, what he did with Cream. You know, we're talking about periods now where John Bonham is another one. These guys nobody had done what they did back then. Now, you know, we got used to hearing John Bonham on samples. We've got used to kind of people, you know, never equaling like Keith Moon and things. But, you know, back then he was doing something that nobody else had done. And really nobody else knew how to do. You know, so they're my favourite drummers, you know, just, I mean, from a nostalgic point of view, but also just because they had an energy. People like Moon particularly, you know, he had, I will still play Won't Get Fooled Again and marvel at how that track just grabs you, you know, by the neck.
Are there any new drummers that you currently find interesting?
Current drummers? Well, it's not that I'm not interested. I just haven't been listening, really. I don't listen to too much music. You know, my two young sons are big fans of, you know, bands like Two Door Cinema Club, One Republic. I went to see One Republic here in Geneva. Nice guys. Because Nicholas, in particular, my 14-year-old, is a big fan. Good drummer, nice guy. You know, I mean, but drummers, no. I don't listen, you know, like in the old days you'd listen, someone would say, you've got to hear this guy, you've got to hear that guy. You know, it's not like that with me anymore. I mean, I'm sure someone's still doing it, but I'm not saying, you know, I'm not drawn to that. There are plenty of good drummers out there. It's what they're playing I'm interested in.
Are you still drumming?
No, I mean, I kind of have been battling this neurological problem with my left arm that I got somewhere on the Genesis reunion. It was on that tour that something happened to part, you know, to my left arm, my elbow. And it happened, it came to me as Los Endos became harder and harder to play. I realized that something was wrong, and I still don't really know what it was that did it. But I can't really hold a drumstick. I can't grip it.
It's neurological.
Nerve thing, yeah. Yeah. And I've had various operations. I had one on my neck, which probably needed to be done anyway. You know, the way it is, you know, my doctors, surgeons, they say, well, it must be something to do with your neck because everything comes from your neck. I do an MRI and, yeah, okay, I've got some vertebrae rubbing on each other, but I've been playing drums all my life, so sitting badly all my life. So that's always going to happen. So I had that fixed, but didn't help my arm. I went to another surgeon. He did two operations on my arm. It's a little bit better than it was, and I went to have an EMG, you know, the electrical shock thing. I had that about a month ago, 3 weeks ago in Miami. Very good, one of the top guys to do, you know, there's a couple of good, great doctors in Miami for spine injuries and for neural problems, and I'm seeing both of them.
So you're looking for a solution?
Yeah, you know, I mean, It's a kind of, for a while, I wasn't really too bothered. You know, I played drums all my life. And okay, so, you get old, things break. I'm now at a situation where I'm going to live with my kids. You know, I'm down in Miami. They live there. So I'm seeing them day to day growing up. And they would love me to go on the road again. And they love me to do what I do. And I'm feeding off their enthusiasm.
I had heard that you joined your son's school band for a gig.
Yeah, he was school drummer, middle school drummer, Nicholas. And his music teacher said, be great if your dad came and sang with you. So I was asked, and I came, and I sang with him. And that was cool. I mean, that was great to do because we did In the Air Tonight, you know, and he got to play my drum fill. I only did a couple of songs, but it was great fun. But, I don't know. Right now it's odd. I would never have dreamt about sitting here doing interviews for something that I'd been enthusiastic about putting together, which is this remastering, repackaging, you know, the dusting off of these old songs, which I know everybody knows In the Air Tonight now. Everybody knows Susudio. Everybody knows One More Night and Against All Odds. There's a lot of other songs out there that I've done that maybe other people will discover again or for the first time because they were overlooked. You know, I mean, when these albums came out, the singles were played. It was Can't Hold Up, Susudio, One More Night, In the Air Tonight. There's every album's got 11 songs on, and I take as much trouble with the other 10 as I do with the one that gets played a lot. So there's other stuff to be discovered.
So you still have an interest if a good project comes along?
Well, yeah. You know, it can be the smallest thing. I remember I've been staying in a hotel up until recently in Miami, and I got to know pretty much the staff, you know, the bellman, the kind of room service people. Guy was bringing my bags up. I guess he was 30, 32, black guy. He said, when are you going to bring another album out, Mr. Collins? I said, I don't know. He said, man, we miss you. He said, we miss you. There's nothing like you out there now. And I can, you know, it touched me. I can still remember it. I can picture the guy. I see him when I go back there. I could never really explain to him what it kind of means, you know, because he probably thinks you get that all the time, whereas you do get a, hi, Mr. Collins, I love your music, you know. Okay, well, name me another couple of songs apart from In the Air Tonight and Against All Odds. Come on, you know. But there are other people out there that actually do listen to. There's a lady, a black waitress in a Japanese restaurant in Miami, and she comes up to me and she says, I got to know her quite well now, but she said, you know, I'm not supposed to say anything, but I want you to know that I grew up with your music. And I just think, wow, you know, maybe I should do something. You know, maybe I should go out there and do something else.
Do you ever think you'll retire?
I'm a bit like an oil tanker. You know, you stop. You can slam on the brakes, but it takes an awful long time to stop. You know, an oil tanker, you know, it takes miles to turn around or stop because of the momentum. The forward momentum. So I think that it's taken me this long to actually convince people I'm retiring. And now I'm kind of doing something. I will never be as busy as I was, you know, and I don't want to be, and nor could I be. But you know, we'll see what happens with these records. It really feels quite nice to have the material that is tested. But the chance of it coming out again and reaching people that it's never been heard of. I mean, yes, the bookends have been heard of, the In the Air Tonight. But I mean, there's other songs on those records on both sides, you know, and we've done it with all the other albums. You know, we've reshot the photographs, as I say, you know, so every album is going to come out remastered with extra tracks, the live tracks. It's interesting to see it's an opportunity to reevaluate what I did. And I think maybe I'd been around so much that people couldn't get away from me that they kind of, you know, as you say, the Bowie thing, like the Phil Collins years, the Imperial years, I think was how Neil Tennant and the Pet Shop Boys put it. You know, they were the 80s or the 90s were the Imperial years for them. For me, the 80s were. Yeah, and I think a lot of people kind of knee-jerked their way and sort of said, I don't want to hear that anymore. But actually, when you come back, having been away a little bit, people may have missed you.
Did you ever end up collaborating with Adele?
She sent me a I met her in London. We got on very well. She gave me a piece of music to finish. I started working on it, and I kind of was trying to reach out to her to see what. She gave me a piece of music which had like three or four sections. You know, which section do you like? I don't want to throw away a section that you like, you know. And she just was difficult to get hold of. And in the end, I got hold of her and she said, you know what, I'm moving. I'm in the middle of doing something. So let's just forget about it for a while. And she does this, you know. I mean, she's very talented, but she's being very careful. I mean, she's finished a third album, I think. But I'm not on it because we never finished anything. But I've heard from other people. The guy from One Republic, Ryan, he's the singer. You know, he wrote a co-wrote a couple of songs on her big last album. He said that she's like a ghost. She comes and goes. You know, you never know when you're going
to
get it.
What new artists are you listening to these days?
No, I don't listen to music. I don't listen to it. You know, I don't really. I mean, it's not that I avoid it. I don't listen to it.
Phil, you're like the chef that never cooks at home.
Chefs never, yeah. People that cook the dinner never really eat it, you know. I mean, I used to feel bad about it. I used to, when people say, what are you listening to? And I'd kind of frantically try to come up with something. And I couldn't. And then I read Roger Waters, who I don't like, I have to say. But I read something in an interview and someone said, what are you listening to? And he said, you know, I don't care about anything else. I just care about what I do. I listen to what I do. I'm trying to make it better. And I actually thought, well, that's actually how I feel. So although, you know, I think he hits the nail on the head. When you're doing it, you're listening to what you're doing and you're trying to make it. You know, the other side, the other little guy on my shoulder says, yeah, but, you know, you should know what's out there so that you can, you know. I mean, I used to listen to everything. I'd go around with my radio cassette player in America. Boy, when I went there, I made tapes and tapes and tapes of music that I'd never heard on the radio. And as it came on, I'd put the tape. You know, I just don't do that anymore. I can still get excited by a song. One Republic. This is life in color. Great song.
Phil, thanks for being on the show.
You're welcome.
Phil. Again, thank you very much for coming on the show. It's been a really great pleasure. Thank you again for listening to Popstar Conversations. Be sure to click the subscribe button below and hit the red bell so that you'll be notified of our next exclusive interview. Thank you again for listening.
Thank you for listening to Popstar Conversations. Please join us again for another conversation with your favorite musical artist.